This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Since she succeeded Colin Powell as Secretary of State in 2005, Condoleezza Rice has been in almost perpetual motion on trips to Beijing, Baghdad, Bogota, and Beirut. She stresses the importance of what she calls transformational diplomacy to, as she put it, work with our many partners around the world to build and sustain democratic, well-governed states that will respond to the needs of their people and conduct themselves responsibly in the international system. As Glenn Kessler, diplomatic correspondent for The Washington Post, points out, Secretary Rice has had little success. In a new book, Kessler closely follows her first 2 years as Secretary of State, the problems she left herself from her days as National Security Advisor, and the puzzle of her intellectual about-face from realpolitik, we must treat with states as they are, not as we would wish them, to the transformational democracy of the Bush Doctrine. If you want to talk to Glenn Kessler about Condoleezza Rice, give us a call. Our number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. And the email address is talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. Later on in the program, our political junkie Ken Rudin will join us. So if you have questions about Senator Craig's weekend phone calls, Fred Thompson's late-night declaration, or Senator Warner's decision not to run again, you can email us now, talk@npr.org. But first, Condoleezza Rice. Glenn Kessler joins us here in Studio 3A. His new book is The Confidant, Condoleezza Rice and the Creation of the Bush Legacy. And nice to have you on Talk of the Nation.
Glad to be with you.
And let me ask you first about ideas. Rice and her team, you write, bitterly criticized their predecessor, Colin Powell, well, for any number of things, but among them, for the lack of ideas as they saw it. Yet just a couple of years later, you write of Rice and her team making it up as they go along.
Well, that's right. I mean, the thought was that Colin Powell didn't like to go out and give speeches that expressed the philosophy of the Bush administration. And so Secretary Rice, when she first started, went out and gave speeches in Paris and in Tokyo and in Latin America and most famously at Cairo, where she called for greater democracy throughout the Middle East. And it gave the illusion of someone who was setting a stage. It was all part of image building, actually. A very deliberate plan to recreate her image. But as time went on, it became apparent that, a lot of those ideas, they weren't following up on. They were, as you put it, making it up as they were going along.
Mm-hmm. Is transformational diplomacy, is that an idea?
Well, when she talks about transformational diplomacy, she talks about trying to remake the State Department, and that involves moving more diplomats away from places like Europe and taking them to Asia, where there's more opportunities for the United States. It also is a kind of a code word for going into countries like Iraq and mm-hmm. the Middle East, and changing the nature of those regimes.
That's the transformational part.
That's the transformational. It's really very much a work in progress. It'll be very interesting what happens after she leaves. One thing she has done, which has gotten very little attention, is a complete overhaul of foreign aid, much more geared towards transforming. And it's heavily criticized on the Hill, and it'll be interesting to see whether that survives after she goes.
Mm-hmm. You write, in fact, that she admits that there have been other national security advisors who did better in that job than she did. Her critics, of course, are legion, that she did a terrible job as national security advisor. Is she doing better at State?
I think she's better suited to be Secretary of State. In many ways, she has the attributes for a very successful Secretary of State. She's very charming on the surface, and she is, but can be tough as nails. Mm-hmm. In the book, I describe a number of instances when she is rather blunt with foreign diplomats behind closed doors.
And it seems to work.
And she has what is key to a successful Secretary of State, which is a close relationship with the president. She keeps in touch with him every day. She writes him a personal note every night saying what she did. She speaks to him on the weekend. That is critical for a successful Secretary of State.
And Colin Powell, whatever his great qualities may be, closeness to the President of the United States was not among them.
That's right. Foreign officials told me they were never sure if Colin Powell was selling the United States policy or simply trying to win allies for his own policy battles back home.
Whereas Secretary Rice, when introduced to foreign leaders with the president, he will often say, when she speaks for me. She is my sister, in fact, he
said. Right, yeah, that's right. He would say that she is my sister, which is, that is what you need to be successful on the world stage. When they hear Condoleezza Rice, they're thinking, she's talking for the president. I really have to pay attention to her.
Mm. Yet the problems that fall out of the first Bush administration, the first term of the Bush presidency, which she had no small hand, those continue to dog her.
Right. I mean, that, I think, is one of the ironies of her tenure. I think she has the capabilities to be a really excellent Secretary of State, and yet she is trapped by the mistakes that she made when she was not a very good national security advisor in the first term.
Mm-hmm. Let's see if we can get some listeners in on the conversation. Our number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Our email address is talk@npr.org. We're talking with Glenn Kessler, the diplomatic correspondent for The Washington Post, about his new book about Condoleezza Rice. And let's start with Kathy. Kathy is calling us from Amherst in New York.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
My question is, why doesn't Condoleezza Rice, or why isn't she over in Iraq conducting the same sort of shuttle diplomacy that Madeleine Albright did with Israel and Palestine?
Well, she is trying to do shuttle diplomacy of sorts between the Israelis and the Palestinians.
No, I mean over in Iraq.
In Iraq.
Between the parties in Iraq, like Albright did with Israel and Palestine.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that she has left Iraq. I mean, Iraq is a mess. She would never say that. And she has never, to her staff, as far as I can tell, even indicated any kind of dismay at what's going on in Iraq. But I don't think she sees much chance for success there. She has hired a very capable ambassador. A lot of it is a military issue. And what she's trying to do with the Israeli and Palestinians is to demonstrate to the Arab world that she's trying to solve that problem so that they can then provide more support for the struggling Iraqi government.
In theory, you could argue all of the problems in Iraq or most of the problems are internal to Iraq, various factions there. That should be the province of the U.S. ambassador in Baghdad. Of course, its neighbors are critical to the situation as well. But nevertheless, she might dice it up that way. However, if she saw an opportunity as Secretary of State to go in and do something dramatically good, one presumes that such niceties would not get in her way.
Oh, exactly. In fact, I write in the book, I have a chapter there where I describe how she flew in with the British Foreign Secretary, Jack Straw, and basically engineered the removal of the then interim Prime Minister, Mr. Joffrey. He didn't really want to leave. She talked, relatively bluntly with him, along with Jack Straw. And he was then eased out 3 weeks later, in part aided by a letter that she had brought along for President Bush, which was given to Alitoya Sistani, who is the key Shiite leader there.
Yes.
And so it was that kind of diplomacy where she made a difference. She brought in a new guy, or a new guy emerged. Now, he's not been very good either, but she did intervene in that instance.
So is it fair to say that if she saw opportunities in Iraq, she might do as Kathy advises and be very active in it?
Right. I would think so, though. As I understand it, at the beginning of this year, she decided to focus on three key issues, which is the Israeli-Palestinian issue, the North Korean nuclear crisis, and the problem with Iran.
Hmm. Kathy, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
Here's an email question. This from Diane. Why did we never hear again about Ms. Rice as director of reconstruction in Iraq? As I recall, she replaced Donald Rumsfeld, who wasn't best pleased, but I don't remember actually assuming that role. Is this a...
I'm not familiar with that, as a director of reconstruction.
No, it would have seemed odd for her, either as national security advisor or certainly as Secretary of State, to have been involved in that.
Right. I don't think she was.
All right. Anyway, let's see if we can get, this is, how do you pronounce your name? I'm sorry?
Faroz,
excuse me. I didn't want to butcher it too badly. San Antonio, I'm willing to go that far. You're on the air, Faroz. Go ahead, please.
Hi. I just wanted to ask, the Bush administration's policies so far has been characterized by major things are the Israeli war on Lebanon, the U.S. attack on Iraq, and other such things. And I'm curious in this regard why your guest believes that this notion of democracy promotion, or this he calls it a philosophy of democracy promotion, is anything other than public relations or kind of self-serving public relations. I don't understand why it's taken seriously.
Glenn?
Well, I think it's a bit harsh to say it's public relations. I mean, I've had long conversations with Secretary Rice about this. I think she really believes it. Now, you can argue almost anything any kind of administration does is to some extent public relations. But they've certainly bet the farm on this. This has been the key part of their foreign policy since the second inaugural. And they haven't done it necessarily very well, and haven't followed it up, and it's tied up with contradictions. But to simply say it's public relations, I think, is a bit hard.
Well, just to follow up on Feroz's point, if you say go to American University in Cairo and talk about diplomacy and in Egypt, too, and there are democratic activists still rotting in Egyptian jails about which Ms. Rice says nothing.
Well, this is the problem. These are the contradictions. When she went there, she only went to Egypt after she had first canceled one trip because they had jailed a democracy activist. She got him released. Then she went there. She made her speech. She made a big point about some activists being held in Saudi Arabia. They were released. But, there was this kind of blind faith, if you will, in the power of democracy and freedom, that when she pushed forward to have Palestinian elections that included the militant group Hamas, she was completely shocked by the fact that they won. And so then the policy shifted, and then you needed the help of the Saudis and the Egyptians to put the squeeze on the Palestinian government. And what that meant is...
Well, not so much pressure on their democracy, which they're not doing anything about either.
Right, exactly. And then just a few weeks ago, you saw her go there and give tens of billions of military aid to these governments because we're trying to get their help, on the Iraq situation.
Feroz, thanks very much for the call. Appreciate it. All right. We're talking with Glenn Kessler about his legacy of Condoleezza Rice and his new book, The Confidant. You can join us, 800-989-8255. Email is talk@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. Stay with us. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Condoleezza Rice faces new questions about what she accomplished as Secretary of State and as National Security Advisor, and about her legacy. Her last 2 years are the focus of a new book by Glenn Kessler. He's the diplomatic correspondent for The Washington Post and author of The Confidant, Condoleezza Rice and the Creation of the Bush Legacy. If you have questions for him, give us a call. 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email is talk@npr.org. And I wanted to clarify something we were talking about, an email we got earlier in the previous segment questioning about Mrs. Rice taking over the Director of Reconstruction. A little research by our producers suggests that she may have been talking about the Iraq Stabilization Group, and this was back in 2003 when she was Director of National Security, yes?
That's right. When she was the National Security Advisor, there was an announcement made. It was actually made as a leak to the New York Times that... she was going to be in charge of this Iraq Stabilization Group, which in many ways was an effort by the White House to take charge of the Iraq policy from the Pentagon, which had seized it and hadn't done a very good job with it. I think most people would say that Secretary Rice didn't do a particularly good job with it once it was in her hands at the White House either.
Let's see if we can get another caller on the line, and let's go to Tom. Tom's with us from Fayetteville in North Carolina.
Yes, hello. Thanks for taking my call. I'm a Army officer down here in Fayetteville, and my question is about the balance of power between the Pentagon and the Department of State. In a previous assignment, I worked with some Department of State officers who were very upset because things that happened after 9/11 in their mind had led to the Department of State becoming subservient to the Pentagon, and they listed a number of examples, which I won't go into detail here, but things like, for example, things like the Department of State having to classify a document had to ask the Pentagon if it was okay, something to that effect. Has Condoleezza Rice, in your opinion, done anything to try to reestablish that balance of power So you had these two entities that could essentially offset one another and create a better governing organization.
Glenn Kessler.
Yeah, yes, actually she has. Part of the dynamic that was going on in the first term of the Bush administration was you not only had Secretary Rumsfeld there, but you also had Vice President Cheney, who always generally took Rumsfeld's side. And so Colin Powell was constantly outflanked, and he didn't get much support from Condoleezza Rice over at the White House. Now the situation is that you have Secretary of State Rice, who is very close to the president, and Rumsfeld, he's now out of the picture, but even in the second term, Rumsfeld was pretty weakened and drained by the Iraq War. Cheney had lost a fair amount of influence because of the departure of his key aide.
Scooter Libby.
Scooter Libby, who was indicted and then convicted of perjury. And so the dynamic changed. And you also had Secretary Rice had at the National Security Council her former deputy, Steve Hadley, who was now running interference for her. So the power dynamics completely shifted. And with Secretary of Defense Gates, once he's come on board, he's told his staff, we're focusing on the military. We leave the diplomacy to the State Department. In the first term, the Pentagon under Rumsfeld felt that, you know, it did diplomacy as well.
Okay. Thank you. I appreciate it.
All right, Tom. Thanks very much for the phone call. And let's see if we can get this will be Tom. Tom with us from Kansas City in Kansas.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call. I am just curious. Condoleezza Rice's training was all in the Cold War, where things were very black and white. Again, sort of you're for us or against us, and didn't allow for much complexity. Did that shape her thinking to the point where it limits her as an effective Secretary of State in a more complex world?
Glenn Kessler, I've addressed that point, but I want to also expand it as soon as you finish this answer.
Well, that is certainly her training, and I think one could argue that when she became National Security Advisor, her background was a bit of a detriment. That she was not only just an expert in the Cold War, but she had a very narrow specialty, which was East Bloc military. And so it wasn't, you know, and she did have some experience briefly in the first Bush administration of the father, in which she worked on the reunification of Germany and advised on Russia. But it was not a global perspective. Now, she certainly got a lot of training as National Security Advisor dealing with a range of issues. So she came into the job as Secretary of State, certainly more prepared than when she was National Security Advisor. But the one interesting thing is if you ask her questions about the Middle East or history, lessons she has drawn from history about the Middle East, she doesn't answer with many Middle Eastern examples. She'll often answer with historical analogies dating to the Cold War.
Which raises a question, and this has to do with her intellectual orientation. Her entire professional life was spent as a student of Realpolitik, a student of the great Hans Morgenthau and a follower of Brent Scowcroft, the current president's father's national security advisor. Cautious. You treat states as they are, not as you would wish them to be. It's a philosophy in many ways about limited power, not the unlimited power of the sole superpower. Then she gets to be National Security Advisor and changes. What did she change to and why, Glenn Kessler?
Well, she will say that she changed because of September 11th, that she rethought history after September 11th. And looked back at what happened in the Cold War and things that, such as the having a democratic charter in Japan, loomed larger in her mind. Now, I don't know.
I just wonder, though, that if her entire method of thinking hasn't been inalterably sort of channeled into too simplistic a view, where if you take the statements by the Bush White House and replace terrorist with communist, you'd be right at home at the height of the Cold War back in the 60s. It's almost like her neural pathways have been formed in a way where she can't think in a multidimensional way.
Well, realists are not famous for being knee-jerk anti-communists. It's a very nuanced view of you teat with the power, not with the ideology. But anyway.
Right, exactly. But I've never quite understood her explanation. And and she'll say, well, I once was a realist, or back when I was a realist, and now I'm not. I mean, a lot of it has to do with her closeness to the president. I mean, I think that the president really changed her. The president has this view. He has this very firm belief in the power of freedom, and that if you people are free, they won't be terrorists. They'll make the right choices, and she has adopted that. Mm-hmm. And it's a very interesting case of where she was brought in to essentially tutor the president when he was a foreign policy novice, and the teacher has become the pupil.
Mm-hmm. Yet you also describe her as someone who's not very reflective, at least certainly not in public. And once she believes an idea, she will then hold on to that idea without questioning it until she suddenly doesn't believe it anymore.
That's right. That's exactly how she is. And I mean, and her friends say that she's the least reflective person they've ever met, that she believes in it at the moment. And when she changes her mind, she moves on, but she doesn't go back and think, which in some ways is a great talent for this kind of job, because I've sat there and listened to her mm-hmm. Give an explanation for something. It would be completely the opposite of what she was saying 6 months ago, and yet it won't bother her that it's contradictory.
Mm-hmm. Here's an email. This is from Mike. Being such a close confidant and workhorse of the Bush administration, was there anything that Ms. Rice had a hard time agreeing to do, something that may have gone against her better judgment?
I've not found an example of that. This administration is somewhat difficult to penetrate, and they don't like to, and she in particular does not like to admit any kind of mistake. And I have tried to, as other reporters have tried, I have tried to get her to talk about Iraq. Didn't you make mistakes? What were the mistakes you made there? And mm-hmm. she will kind of fall on a well-known refrain about, well, we didn't realize how tough it was going to be. We didn't know how badly Saddam Hussein had messed up the country, which are not really answers.
No.
And I falter for not actually allowing that kind of discussion, among her, not only among her staff, but with the American people, just to be honest about it and say, we made some real mistakes here and now we're trying to fix it. She won't engage in that kind of conversation.
Here's an email from Art F. I'm amazed to hear your guest opine that Condoleezza Rice is a good Secretary of State. I've never seen anyone less statesmanlike. Can important instances be cited where she's been successful in resolving a difficult dispute?
Well, I don't think I necessarily said she was a good Secretary of State. I said she had the attributes to be a good Secretary of State. And if you read my full book, you'll see I give a very nuanced portrait of her.
Mm-hmm.
One thing she did right at the beginning was repair relations with the European allies, which were badly worn after the Iraq War. And I think she did a pretty good job of that. She had a real clear plan for doing that. And it paid off later when she was faced with the outcry over the CIA prisons in Europe. And she managed to have put an investment in there, and things didn't blow up again. And I think those relationships have been, by and large, restored.
Partly because of new leaders in both Germany and France.
Right, but she laid the groundwork. You have to give her credit for laying the groundwork. Another thing she did, which is somewhat controversial, and history will let us know whether it was a good idea or not, but she very quickly struck a nuclear agreement with India, which overturned 30 years of U.S. nuclear policy. The fact that she was able to do that right away, early in her term, showed a great deal of self-confidence on herself, as well as the confidence of the president.
A deal that has yet to be finalized.
Right. It's not a deal, but it has passed many hurdles, and now suddenly it is extremely controversial in India.
Mm-hmm.
But there is an attempt there to position India as one of the great allies of the United States, and this is a country that has been historically antagonistic to the United States. The risk is, the contradiction is that, it kind of overturns all those years of nuclear power policy that was to prevent the spread of nuclear weapons, and people may look back at it and say, well, we now have nuclear powers all over the globe, in part because of what Condi Rice did with India. But at the moment, you have to give her credit for pushing that thing through and getting it past a reluctant Congress and getting the Indian government on board.
Inevitably, though, she's going to be remembered for whatever happens in the Middle East, in Iraq, I guess, as a result of her time as National Security Advisor, and I guess by default, what she didn't do as Secretary of State. And more importantly, I guess, for her personal legacy is what comes of this mission she is now on to try to broker some sort of agreement between the Palestinians and the Israelis.
That's right. And their history will, at the moment, will not be kind at all. I mean, I detail in my book the many missteps she made on the Palestinian issue from A to Z. And you also have the Iranian nuclear breakout, which is she missed some opportunities there as national security advisor and has been really unable to make much progress on that front, too.
Mm-hmm. She has done better with North Korea. So what happens remains to be seen.
Right. Well, and that's basically putting back the egg that she and the rest of the administration broke early in the first term.
We're talking with Glenn Kessler of The Washington Post. His new book is The Confidant, Condoleezza Rice and the Creation of the Bush Legacy. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's see if we get another caller on the line. This is Gary. Gary with us from Turlock in California.
Yes, thanks for taking my question. After her last two positions, do you feel that she has the ability or even the personality to be president of the United States?
Well, that's a good question. She certainly has the potential for political charisma, and she has some leadership qualities that would make her an attractive political candidate. Some of her advisors have suggested to me that she's thinking of starting with something like governor of California, though for the record, she will always say she never really had any interest in politics. It's not quite true. She once considered running for Congress in the early 80s.
And for the record, you say that one of her aides planted the question, are you going to run for president?
That's right. One of her aides planted that question, which then fostered that speculation, which was that the reason he did that was to get the stories out there to give her the image, enhance her image as part of the image mm-hmm. makeover. And it was very clever and a smart thing to do from a public relations standpoint. But the whether or not she would make a good president, it's very hard to tell. You know, the famous John F. Kennedy joke is that there are only two qualifications you need to become president. One is to be 35 and the other is to be elected.
Gary, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you for taking it.
There are any number of stories about Condoleezza Rice. You write that she's an enigmatic person, yet we hear of occasional blow-ups in jewelry stores or shoe stores like that. What is she actually like? I must say there's a remarkable picture in your book of her talking with reporters on the plane, and you see her face, I see her face, almost as I've never seen it before, far more relaxed than she presents it in public.
Right. She has she's different in private, and that's she can be very relaxed. I don't think she has necessarily a great sense of humor or anything like that, but she can be very open about the challenges she faces in ways that she's not open when the microphone is on or the TV camera is on. And she is a really, in many ways, a very charming and graceful person. She's very polite. She's very friendly. I've written articles that have annoyed her. And she'll just come up to me on the plane and say, oh, boy, what made you so cynical today, Glenn?
And it must be said, she's not only cooperated with your book, but with a couple of other books about her that are coming out about this time.
That's right, she has.
A lot of image spinning.
Right. I think her aides had said to her, look, these books are going to be written one way or the other, and you're a person of history, so you might as well go along for the ride.
And what will she do after she leaves the administration? She is on leave as provost of Stanford University. Is she planning to return there?
She would not return as provost, but she says she wants to return to Stanford. It's unclear how Stanford will greet her. She was not a very popular provost when she was there. And it's a campus that has not been that crazy about Bush administration policies. But there is a place for her, and I assume she'll veg out for a while, maybe write a book, do some thinking, make some speeches. She talks about having this dream of running a sports team, mm-hmm. Kind of taking a page out of what the president did.
He used to run the Texas Rangers.
Yeah. That's right, and he gets some money to back you. Be the general manager. She is a total fanatic about sports. I don't personally know much about sports, but she will. She always talks in sports metaphors.
Her dad, you write, was a football coach, among other things, when she was a kid. And either to spend time with him or because she was really interested, she absorbed a whole lot of football.
That's right. Well, he was expecting a boy, and so she didn't want to disappoint. And she is passionate about it. I mean, she knows every team and every player, and she can, in ways that amaze me.
Glenn Kessler's book is The Confidant, Condoleezza Rice and the Creation of the Book, the Bush Legacy. He was kind enough to join us here in Studio 3A. Thanks so much for your time today.
You're welcome.
When we return, Larry Craig's half-hearted resignation, Fred Thompson's weekend announcement, and the late-night announcement. That's tonight in Leno, isn't it? And the rest of the week's political news, our political junkie Ken Rudin will join us. 800-989-8255. Email talk@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. It is the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.